What's up, everybody? Welcome to PSI Love You XOXO episode 67. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside he only does everything.
You're being Moriarty. Especially loud today.
I'm delivering.
I feel like that. I don't know if I'm just a little more tired today.
I think you're a little more tired.
But that seems like the normal. Like shit last
that's
night.
A normal thing where I turn it on. I feel like I don't think that was
that outdoor. Was seemed louder. Than
Kevin,
usual.
Was that out of bounds loud or was that normal level of bound or loudness? Yeah, but I'm saying for you being a human being who listens to a lot of the show start.
A little louder, but I mean,
Okay. Bye. See you. Bye, Kevin. Slept like shit last night.
Yeah, I just didn't sleep very well.
Why?
I don't know. Just didn't.
Did you play any games?
Hitman Go on Vita last night. Mm.
Yeah. How close are you getting to platinum on that one?
Very close. Very close. Probably an hour away.
Oh, nice. Okay, good. Good.
You know, I have to admit that I'm on the 6 of 7 worlds. There have been like 3 or 4 stages where I've had to go online to look for a solution.
Like, how the fuck
for
do I do this?
Not to beat it, but specifically to do one aspect of those three
challenges,
stamps.
Like, yeah.
Man, how do you get the briefcase without killing anyone or whatever it is? And there were a couple of them where I'm like, oh, but there were a couple where I'm like, I would have never figured this out.
Yeah, 100%. That was when I did Hitman Go, that was the exact same thing. I played all the way through and then, I was like, all right, cool. I want to get the platinum. What the fuck do I do? How do I do? And I honestly didn't like it that much, which is weird because I compliment Letter Quest so much on the, here, you finish the stage however you want, but then there's these little things. Granted, maybe because it wasn't tied to the platinum, but having just platinum Lara Croft go, right? Like, I prefer that take on it where it's like, cool, I'm exploring and I'm playing and there's no beat it in this many moves.
Oh, there isn't?
No.
So you just beat it however you beat it.
Beat it however you beat it, and then there's collectibles to find around the world.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds tantalizing. I actually really enjoy Hitman Go.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I'm going to take away from the game.
That said, I'm shocked. Knowing my own skill level, which is very mediocre at these kinds of games.
At puzzly kind of games,
yeah. I'm shocked how far I've gotten. Like, how I've gotten I've gotten probably 210 stamps or something like that, and only 4 of them I needed help with.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. No. I hear you on that one.
And I never, like, had a problem beating a stage.
Sure.
You know, but it's a really fun game. It's really, really quite tailored to Vita, I think.
Yeah.
Which is coincidental, since that's what we're talking about today.
It is, isn't it? Of course, full disclosure, my girlfriend Jen works on, is brand manager over there, and the Vita load time suck balls on Lara Croft Go. So I'll put that out there, too.
How bad is it?
Here's the thing. If you're only going to play there, you're going to be like, these seem long, and put it down and not worry about it. You'll be fine. You'll do it no problem. I played it for a long time and then I saw it on PS4 and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Because PS4 is like, no problem. And then Vita's like, give me a second.
How long does it need to load a map?
I'll say 5 to 7 seconds.
Oh, that's not bad.
But it's enough that it's like, no, it's like, it's not bad until you keep fucking up the same thing. And you have to, because it's like you die and then let's reload it. And then you die, let's reload it.
How do you find the collectibles? How do you tap on them?
On Vita? Yeah. On PS4, you can use your stick and you move the reticle around.
And they're easy to find. They're just there.
Well, I mean, some are challenging, like, but it's like, it's really good about telling you when you're short one.
So I was going to say,
you beat the level and you come back and you can open up your little book and it'll show you, like, out of the 4 here, you're missing one. So you know to go back and look through that.
Through that stage.
Yeah.
And they're easy to find.
Yeah. Because you know what to look for eventually and how they start hiding them and everything. There's a few that are cleverly hidden. I move that thing out. You have to be like looking and multitasking and certain sorts.
Cool. Well, yeah. I'll put that up next, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is PSI Love You XOXO. It is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast. So go there, listen to the other podcasts, listen to the other YouTube channels, subscribe to everything, rate us in the world. When you see people on the street, you yell at them, I give PSI Love You XOXO 5 stars, and they will be scared. They will drop their groceries and they will run from you. But it's what we're asking you to do. And if you're a true fan, you will do this. Also, remember, this is the #1 PlayStation podcast on the internet, all thanks to you. So thank you so much for all of your support. Remember, it posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, rain or shine, just like this episode did, which we are recording weeks ago. This is a time capsule. For us, it's the 13th of December. Rogue One is not released worldwide. Kanye West and Donald Trump are in New York in a lobby somewhere. That's all anybody's talking about on the internet. That's all we know right now. Because you see, kind of funny, of course, taking the final 2 weeks of December off. But we're banking all the podcasts. So you're going to have a PS I Love You XOXO every week. You're going to have a Game Over Grady Show. You're going to have Kind of Funny Games Cast. No Colin Rigg Live. You got to suck it up on that one. I'm sorry for you. But we wanted to make sure you had content as per usual because we don't like missing days on any of the shows. So this is a PS I Love You XOXO special, really. You might have remembered that back in the day when we actually launched the new studio, we did a piece of evergreen content for a PS I Love You XOXO where we went through and did the top 10 for Kinda Funny PS4 games. Now we're going through and going to do the top 10 Vita games. Colin, how does the system work?
Well, we each make our own individual numbered list from 1 to 10. The 10th place game gets 1.9283 and so on until you get to number 1, which gets 10 points. We can fuse and synthesize these two lists together to make the ultimate Vita list. And I must say that I found this list much more difficult to make than the PS4 list.
Sure. There's a lot of great Vita games.
There are a lot of great PS4 games too, but I think that the Vita's older and I honestly think more... just more games worth playing per capita, let's
sure,
say,
sure.
Than there are in PS4. So it was a more difficult list for me to make, but I made it nonetheless, and I think we're going to have something very, very good and very definitive here.
Yeah, well, the Vita has a great library, and that's what we've done the episode before, so you've decided to buy a PlayStation Vita, because people kept asking the same Vita questions. But I think the one we get so much I was thinking, you guys talk about the Vita all the time, is it okay to time to buy a Vita? And it's like, yes,
always a good time.
If you are there on the games we're going to go through and talk about, Ryan, do you like them? Do you like enough of them that you think it would justify buying a system? Then yeah, you're going
to
be fine.
You know, what would have been a better time for you to buy a Vita 4 years ago? You fucking clowns.
We could have been. We could have had Freedom Wars 2 right now.
You're the reason the Vita failed.
We could have had a Golden Abyss 2 right now if it wasn't for you people. Where is another Luminous?
You guys all dropped the ball. You're all.
You fucked us.
You're a disgrace.
We loved you and you fucked us, people.
You're a disgrace.
Hope you enjoy your VR. Go ahead and do VR dirty like you did Vita dirty. Now. The one thing about it, right, we're going to go through this, is I want to point out the same things we pointed out for PS4. These are our favorite games. This is not some bullshit thing where we're like, well, we need a racing game and we're trying to put racing. This is just Colin and I, here we are recommending Vita games for you.
Right, and I also would say that I think this list is good. I think this list would change on any given day.
100%. We're going to move around. Now, the one thing, when you got here today, I asked you how you wanted to play this. Because when we did the PS4 list, we had a caveat in there that if it were going to go on this list... If it was going to go on the PlayStation 4 list, if it was going to go on the top 10 list, it needed to have come out at the same time on PlayStation 4. So we weren't saying like, okay, cool, DC Universe Online came out on PC and PS3 back in the day. Then it finally came to PS4, but that would disqualify it from it. Like late ports and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Is that fair to do here? I say no.
No, I don't think
my
it's
my top three games are games that have come late that I think are at home on Vita and where I've played the most on Vita and where I love it the most on Vita.
I think that... It's the parameters must change for Vita because Vita is the recipient of so many indie ports and PC ports and phone ports and everything else that I think that the parameters are a little too stringent in that respect. And even if I went back and did the PS4 list again, I think I might remove those caveats just specifically because like, why does it really matter?
Yeah. Any
seems arbitrary. I think that next time we do the PS4 list, we should do a longer PS4 list and we should change the rules. And that was the thing with this one was that I had a hard time narrowing this down to 10. I really did.
I like that though. I like that it's hard to do. I like that you have to get in there in the weeds and actually make some hard cuts. And that's the whole thing. You know, I know we're going to do honorable mentions, I'm sure, at some point. There's a whole list of games here. I was like, well, these are all fucked. These had a chance, but they're fucked because of these rules. If we implemented the rules, we didn't. I moved things around. So where do you want to start, Colin? Do you want to do some honorable mentions that didn't make your list, but things that should have?
Yeah. I mean, so I'll tell you the games that I wrote down that didn't make the list. There's a few of them.
Like, oh,
there are quite a few of them. I wrote down Hitman Go. Doesn't make the list, but I think that it's a great game. I wrote down Letter Quest Remastered. I think it's a great game as well, but it's not on the list.
It really is. I want to continue to say that. I said it a long time ago. It planted in your brain and finally grew later on. Everyone else should let it grow in their brain and play Letter Quest
Remastered. Pretty sure I'm the first person to play it on Vita. But the thing about this is that I beat it and 100%ed it. I got all the trophies and then I tweeted out that I really liked it, tweeted at the developer, and they were like, and I was like, but no platinum. It was a huge mistake. And they're like, well, we didn't fit the parameters for platinum. And I go, oh, you're so young and naive, Bacon Bandits.
You have much
to learn. If the shite mayonnaise game can get a platinum
just
trophy,
ask so and you. Demand platinum, developers. They will give it to you if you ask and demand it. When they say no, really, we need a platinum.
Mutant Muds Deluxe is on here. I think that's a really great game. I'm friends with the guy that made it, Jules Watson, so I just want to throw that out there. But this game really found a home on Wii U specifically in 3DS, but ported to Vita, and I think really fun. And they just came out with a Mutant Muds Super Challenge, which is basically picks up where the game left off. So the hardest stage, the first stage is like harder than any of the stages of Mutant Muds Deluxe, what I think is pretty cool. So don't jump into Super Challenge unless you played Mutant Muds Deluxe. But when I went home, I went home with Aaron to Massachusetts this summer, that's like all I played on Vita. I played it for hours and hours and hours and got all the coins and all the gems and unlocked all the characters. A lot of fun. Saturday Morning RPG is on this list. I think that game's really fucking rad. You can also play it on Steam. It's basically an episodic sort of role-playing game. Takes place in like the 80s. A lot of quirky, kind of weird shit in it. The combat's kind of cool. Like you fight with like compasses and rulers and so it's interesting.
That one has been sitting on my Vita since you recommended it initially, and I haven't jumped in. I'm going to. I'm totally. It sounds awesome when you talk about it.
It is. It's a neat game, and it's they're a little bite-sized episode, so you know you can get through pretty quick. I think Danganronpa 2 Goodbye Despair is on here. Got to give a tip of the hat to it. I actually never got all the way through it. Hmm. Played it for many, many hours. Something else came up. It's easy to get distracted in that game. It doesn't have the same special something that the first one does. Exactly, but they're still it's still fantastic. Zeo Drifter's on here. That's another game by my friend Jules Watson. Very bite-sized Metroidvania. You can beat it in like an hour and a half. Really, really cool game. And a unique kind of take on that particular formula, which I think people might like. Race the Sun's on here. I think Race the Sun's fucking cool. It's probably my favorite racing game ever.
I remember that, I like the argument at IGN one time when they're like, racing game. You said Race the Sun. Like, is that even a racing game? And you go, race is in the title.
It's called Race the Sun. The idea of Race the Sun, if you haven't played it, is that the sun is constantly setting in the distance and you're driving towards it. So the faster you drive, the more the sun will rise. And when the sun sets, because you're not going fast enough, then the game's over. It's a really...
It's awesome. Race the Sun's another great one that I find... That's one of the ones that I find myself not deleting. It's on there, and then play every so often on a plane ride, I'm like, I want to play something, but not get into the weeds. And like, oh, there it is, Race the Sun.
Velocity 2X is an honorable mention. I don't think it's as good as Velocity Ultra, specifically because I know that what they were trying to do, trying to add in at Future Lab, trying to add in a side-scrolling element to it, which I think is cool and adds to the dynamic of the game and makes the game more frantic, which is what the game's all about. It's totally about frantic, frenetic movement. But I wish that they stuck with the ship down combat or the camera down on the ship combat. Pixel Junk Shooter Ultimate, I think, is excellent on Vita. It's also on PS4 and it runs better there. East Memories of Celcida, I think, is probably the best action RPG, like pure action RPG on the console or on the handheld.
My only thing, that's the one where I jumped between characters, right?
Yeah.
I didn't like that. I wanted to be one person.
Rayman Origins is awesome. Rayman Legends, you can talk about too. Really, really great, stylish platformers. And Escape Plan, which I think was the first great game on Vita. I think that was the first really great game on Vita, along with Super Stardust Delta, which is another honorable mention. But there are better games now. So sure. I don't think that's an exhaustive list of games I would like to mention, but those are games that I jotted down as I was going through my trophies that I was like, maybe this can make the list.
Yeah, that's the same way for me, right? I jotted down way more than I actually could put on the list. And so like for me, I have on here most recently Dragon Quest Builders in terms of something that I think deserves a mention. It was on a list, but it wouldn't be in the top 10. But I'm so happy to see Square bring that game to the Vita, support the Vita. Have content there that is fun that you can get lost in. I still need to double back. I do want to beat the entire thing. But I just enjoy the Minecraft mix-up. It's super easy. You know what I mean? Not much of a challenge, but it's fun to play. I have Killzone Mercenary on there. Killzone Mercenary, you know, the one true first-person shooter that came. And like when you're talking about console quality and what this system could have been if they would have gone that way and kept AAA going, they had something really interesting there. Really dug it. Loop Trousers, another game that I found myself just sinking hours upon hours on in planes and fucking around on Muni or whatever, continuing to play, enjoying it. Guacamelee, we're obviously huge Drinkbox fans. I have been since Mutant Blobs Attack. Guacamelee I thought was awesome. I bet we'll talk about them at length when we get to the real top 10 list. Little Big Planet I put on there. Little Big Planet PS Vita. That was the big... That year, I remember there was a big argument between what was Game of the Year for Vita, whether it was Little Big Planet Vita or whether it was Persona. And I think the reason we skewed out, and I forget, I know we did videos about it or whatever, because we picked Little Big Planet over Persona at IGN, was the fact that it was just more approachable and a more everyone game, and it was the Little Big Planet experience put onto the Vita, which was pretty awesome, in the ability to have the platforming and the creating and the sharing and downloading and keeping them saved there and able to have a true Little Big Planet game.
I forget that game even exists.
Totally, because it's one that I think... The problem was, in terms of its legacy, it got there too late. It was Little Big Planet again. Oh, you know what I mean? Okay, fine. It didn't set the world on fire. It didn't do something crazy. It might have been the introduction of the one that let you save in levels. I think that might have been a Little Big Planet 3 DLC or some shit like that. But there, it was just more Little Big Planet, which at some point, how excited can you get for more Little Big Planet? However, you can't count how great that is. And if somebody was to buy it right now and had never played a Little Big Planet, I would like, oh, pick that up and take it on the go and have everything you want. This is one of the ones we were talking about. It came up, I think you might actually have it on your list, I don't know, but during PS4 we talked about it, where depending on where you played this game, that's how it shook out, right? I have 3/4 Home on my Vita list.
I think I'd put that on mine too.
Honorable mention thing of just like, that's where I played it, fucking amazing game, loved it so much. Axiom Verge is on here, you know, a Metroidvania that I love that we had to wait a long time, of course, to get to, but when we finally got it on Vita, it was great. Another one where just plane rides melting away as I'm trying to fucking figure this shit out. Volume I put on there too. Again, obviously a PlayStation 4 game, but definitely a game that I waited for the Vita version, and I'm happy I did. Still one that I'm like halfway through because there's so many fucking stages.
Yeah, Volume I got about halfway through as well, especially because the trophies are broken.
I heard about that. Anyway. Yeah, that's the thing. It wasn't for everybody, right? It was some weird thing.
It was weird. I don't remember. I talked to Mike Biffle about what it was about what was happening with my Vita.
Yeah.
And they were getting it from other people, but it wasn't a ubiquitous problem or a common problem even.
And then a final honorable mention to Actual Sunlight. I banged the drum on that one pretty hard last year when we were talking around doing Game of the Year stuff, but you know, a game about being depressed and what that's like and totally living in somebody else's
shoes. So just my life.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a game about my life. That's fun.
So Colin, do you want to begin with what your number 10 pick is?
Number 10, Downwell.
Mm.
I've said this before, so I don't want to beat a dead horse, although I love just beating anything to death.
Yeah.
Downwell is really frustrating and entirely skill-based and skill-driven, with some caveats in there about what kind of power-ups you're going to get and whatnot and how you play the game. But I can't remember a game that I'm not very good at that I just can't stop getting my teeth kicked in by it. It's just...
You haven't figured it out
yet. It annoys me, actually, like where I'm like, I just... This game's in my head a lot. Like I play it often. And I've dumped a lot of time into it this year. And it's just one of those games where I'm like, I can't even get more than like 3/5 of the way through the game on a good day. And the guy is tweeting out about how his mom beat it on hard mode and shit like that. And I'm like, why can't I play this better?
You've watched YouTube videos,
I've studied YouTube videos. I'm like, I don't understand how people are playing it like this. And I've gotten just incrementally better. I think I pretty much hit my ceiling in it. I just love it. I just think it's a really, really fantastic game. It's really pure gameplay. The mechanics are very unique. You're shooting down with your gun boots, but the gun boots are also acting as like a way to hover, but you only have a certain amount of bullets and you have to land. And the reason when you land, you reload. But the problem is that landing destroys your multiplier, which is really important for you to get gems, which are really important for you to buy upgrades and do all these kinds of things and kind of sustain your life. So really great players will play without ever landing. They'll just hop on enemies' heads, which reloads their gun, and they just never touch the ground. And there are trophies for that. I hear that, and I've never even seen it because I didn't want to spoil it for myself. But the last world is like, there you can't land,
really.
And I'm like, but it's so good. It's a very, very good game. And I also like the idea. I believe it's a Japanese game, and I think that it's kind of cool. I'm sure there's a thriving indie scene there, but you just don't see many indie games proliferating in the West. Made by a few people, and this is one of those games. And so I think it's cool. I think some its graphics are going to turn some people off. It's very rudimentary, very old, but it doesn't need to be any more than it is. And I really do highly recommend it. I don't think it's even the same on PS4. It's on PS4 too. I think it's way better on Vita.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. They even went the extra mile when we talk about Vita, right? And developers giving that thing love of adding in the ability to turn the Vita and play like with a widescreen up and down, north, south, which is awesome.
Which Sunflowers is the only other game I can even think does that.
Yeah. And that's the thing about it. Like, I'm with you. Downwell's awesome. Didn't make my list because I never got into it as much as you did. But it's another one that I'm terrible at, but like I will totally pop in and play a little bit and be like, man, this is fun and it's interesting. And like, yeah, the you know, 0 to 60, how good you can get at it is pretty interesting too.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to the point you're making, I also think that when you get a little further or survive a little longer or do something or pop a trophy or whatever, it really feels good in that game. Mm-hmm. Like that game really, in my estimation, makes you work almost more harder than almost any game I played in years in terms of like, it really is. There's an element of luck to it in terms of your draws and all those kinds of things, because at the end of every stage, you get like one of three upgrades. You have to choose one of them. And so you could get great upgrades, you can get shitty upgrades. And so you have to kind of play it that way too. But it's grueling. It's a grueling game.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think it's awesome. I hope that they do a sequel or something and give us a little bit more. Although maybe it stands alone by itself. Maybe that's not necessary.
Sure. Yeah. What else are you going to do to it? My number 10 is Minecraft. For me, it was the one that this is where the promise always was. I was excited. You know, Minecraft came to PC. It's not a real game there. They're beta testing it for us. We all saw it get crazy, though, and get popular. And then when Brian and I started doing Let's Plays of it, when it came to PlayStation 3, it was like, okay, cool. But I kept waiting for that Vita version. The Vita version was the one that I was going to get sunk into because that's what Minecraft's about to me. And I know so many people would want to probably come out and say that it's the worst version because of draw distances and what it can do here. But I don't care. That's not why I'm playing Minecraft. I don't need to see how far out in the distance something is. I don't need to have the worlds. Obviously, the PlayStation 4 worlds and the PC worlds, right? They build up. They scale up so much higher and go so much further out. But for me, those games are about seeing nothing, just seeing a blank slate and going in and burrowing into the wall and making your thing. It's like the power of sitting there. And I remember day after day on the Muni playing that game where it was like, okay, cool. Like I've, you know, I set up this little thing here and I already imported in my, I've been sending back and forth my PS3 world, my, you know, this is my primary world now. I'm doing all this stuff. And so I'm going to go in here. I'm going to mine all this stuff. I'm going to come out here. I'm going to make stone. And then like there was a week I spent just making a high rise. Right, like yeah, I would just turn it on, go in there, do it, build it up, make my staircase, count it out the same way, go make glass, put in the glass, keep going up. And like the weird, weird satisfaction that comes with that of not like enemies weren't a problem, right? I was going to sleep, so I'm dodging all the things that are really out to kill me. And I was just there to build and inhabit this world, but I felt like I was having an impact on it and I was building it around me, obviously. But then in the same breath, I'm building this very, very fucking small spot on the map. And like, if I go out northeast, whatever, I'm going to find something completely different and not be where I am, where I feel like I'm Lord of the Manor. You know what I mean? Like I know everything here. And so to have that ability at your fingertips anytime of, I'm sick of building this castle or this high rise, I'm going to just go out and do it again somewhere else and wander out and find a different locale and like, you know, burrow all the way into the ground until you hit bedrock and find all the coal and do it. Like Minecraft's one of those games that I'm glad it finally got to us, if that makes sense. I was never going to, you know, really play it on PC. It's just an awkward control scheme for me. And I'd seen people having fun with it, but you don't get it. It's like VR to an extent, if you have those tendencies for that kind of gameplay of getting in there and actually getting your feet wet and like, holy shit. Like, I mean, I'm still, and that's the thing is of all the hours I've put into Minecraft, I'm still such a Minecraft novice, right? Like I don't use minecarts and I don't ever use redstone and like all the things every fucking 7-year-old on an iPad knows how to do and do all this stuff. I don't, but I don't need to and I don't want to necessarily, right? Like I like the little world I build and I like the little creation and I love the fact that with Vita it's there anytime I want it, anytime I need it, because it is one of those that I won't play for months and I'll just jump back in and go tool around for and like, okay, now I'm gonna make a bunch of chests and lay them all out here, but dig them into the walls and do these different things, and then okay, now I'm gonna make paintings and put them up on the wall and just decorate this fucking thing. It's crazy.
Yeah, Minecraft never spoke to me, but it was funny because I was watching you play Stardew Valley on PS4 last night, and I was just the same kind of vibe where I'm like, I mean, it's an interesting game, and I'm like, and I like actually like Harvest Moon, but like I'm like, what is our fascination collectively with these games that make you do these menial fucking shit?
Sure,
I just don't. I'm not judging it because I get sucked into that stuff too, but I'm like, it's kind of a strange thing where it's like, you want to be a farmer?
Yeah,
like, I guess.
Go ahead and plant some leeks over here, or whatever, parsnips. Clean up your yard. All right, fine, fuck. I mean, but Minecraft's the same way. But I mean, there's something to the ownership of that where you can go in and it looks overgrown and it's this, but I chop down all the trees and then I rather than just have fucking crap stone, I'm going through and making fine stone and putting that in there. You gotta have the fine stone. You know what I'm talking about?
Number 9, Freedom Wars. A lot of interesting memories are tied to Freedom Wars for me. That game came out around the time when we were quitting our old job.
Yep.
And it has loaded meaning for me in that respect. I remember that being like one of the last big reviews I did. And it's also the last big AAA game that ever came to Vita. And I'm proud that I identified that game early. I've always taken a lot of pride in being, and I know you do too, it being a tastemaker in the PlayStation ecosystem and the games that we identified, I think, earlier than anyone or tried to steer people towards, whether it's Ni No Kuni or Catherine or whatever these games are that I tried to say like, hey, maybe, or Dragon's Crown, whatever, like where I'm like, this game's worth your time. And these games didn't blow up, but I like the idea that someone out there played it because I really insisted that they should try. And I think Freedom Wars was the last example of that for both of us at IGN.
Yeah, we both banged the drum hard on Freedom Wars.
And I think that the game is really special and really good. Mechanically, I don't think it's anything to write home about. I think in the same vein as like God Eater or Soul Sacrifice or whatever fucking game out there where you're beating up massive enemies. There's not too much to it in that respect. I mean, there's more to where there's guns and there's melee combat and all that kind of stuff. And
leveling up, building all your shit, changing your outfits.
But it's the whole ecosystem and like that world, the prison sentences and all that kind of stuff. I think the whole metagame is actually just as cool as playing it itself. And there's a good reason other than like, I never understood games where it's like the loot grind is fun. This is why I play MMOs, because I want loot. And I'm like, or Destiny or whatever. I'm like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
To each his own, but I'm like, that doesn't speak to me. What spoke to me in Freedom Wars was, I was getting better weapons and better gear and able to craft better things and attract better talent to my team or whatever the fuck it was that you were doing. Like, but if it, like manufacturing and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm whittling down this prison sentence. I'm earning currency. I'm earning a right to go to more places and like gain my freedom slowly. And I think that the metagame was really cool.
Like, you run too much before you get your code for it, you get more years added to your sentence.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's a clever and I think a cheeky kind of game, and I like it. I love Freedom Wars.
Me too. I'll talk about it later on. My number nine is Hotline Miami. This is another one, right, that came to every platform under the sun. And when it got to Vita, I feel like that's where it was meant to be for the most part. Like, it controlled so well. And it worked in a way that Hotline Miami 2 didn't, right? Like, did you play a lot of Hotline Miami 2?
No, the second one I was so excited for, and then because I beat the first one, but then
Hotline Miami 2, it was something different about, like, I felt like they were giving you too many open environments and giving you too much space. Hotline Miami 1 was very, not linear, but limited, and you could kind of get a really good grasp of what was happening. And of course, before they fixed controller support, when you try to play, I remember at Game of the Year, somebody was like, oh, Hotline Miami is awesome, try to play it, and they gave us a PC. And it's like so cumbersome to control, but Vita made it work so easy and be able to pull and look to the side and see what was around. That was another game where it was just like the never ending gobstopper of, I just never wanted it to end, because every time I'd pop in, you know, one flight could be one map of like, how do I figure this out? What do I do? How is that guy going to react when I come in this room? Can I throw this at that guy? Do all these different things, and trying to figure out your strategy for this game that is, you know, I'm making fun of Lara Croft Go in the beginning. This is about dying, go again, dying, go again. Die, figure it out. Like that, making it where I didn't feel like, you know, in Lara Croft, when you're playing on Vita and there's these load times, it is like, fuck, I just reloaded this map, so let's sit here and actually plan it out in my head. Whereas Hotline Miami was very much, let's jump in and just go. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it was very trial and error. That's a good one that I maybe should have been an honorable mention on mine. I really did like Hotline Miami. What I remember most is the guy that made the game coming to our studio or to the office at IGN. He had a Mega Man 3 tattoo, which I thought was awesome. But it was one of those games that you heard a lot about from the PC crowd that year in 2012, and it really was, I think, made for the Vita. I know that that's hyperbolic to a lot of people, but that game belongs on Vita. So I agree with you. I think that's a good choice.
Thank you, Colin. What's number eight for you?
Number eight, Killzone Mercenary. I know that was one of your honorable mentions. Killzone, pound for pound, with the exception of maybe Uncharted, and I say maybe, I think it could be, it can go either way, is probably the most AAA game on the Vita. Mm-hmm. And not just AAA for AAA's sake. I think that Guerrilla Cambridge did a really nice job with Killzone of migrating what I really consider to be a franchise that's somewhat middling in PlayStation, or for PlayStation. I know that there are diehard Killzone fans, and I really started to come around, ironically, with Shadowfall and Mercenary, which I know are games that, with Shadowfall, a lot of people didn't like, and Mercenary, a lot of people didn't play. But I think that that's where Killzone really hit its stride, and why I hope that Guerrilla makes another one.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen on Vita, but you know, Killzone, I think, has a future, and I think Mercenary, combined with Shadowfall's open-endedness and non-linearity, to a degree, is the perfect fusion for what Killzone could and should be. Worlds that are not too open, but open. Worlds that give you different ways to do things, but not too many different ways to do things. Combined with the currency of Mercenary, of the fact that everything you do, everyone you kill in single player or multiplayer is combining to give you a better arsenal and unlock things.
To go through and get the best unlockables possible, target weapons you wanted. That was great. Mm-hmm.
I think that, similar to Freedom Wars, the metagame is where it's at with Mercenary. And I think that it worked really well in Vita, and it's a shame. People loved it and it did well, I think, but it's a shame that it, A, didn't ship in better shape because the patch ended up being bigger than the game, which is incredible. That was fucked up,
especially with how small memory cards
were. Right, exactly. If you had a 4 gigabyte memory card, even with the card in the game and not downloaded, you couldn't play it. So they mismanaged that game, and I think that that's sad and too bad. It wasn't going to matter. It wasn't going to change the trajectory of Vita, but Mercenary is one of those games where I'm like, I should go back and play that again. Mm. Like, that's one of those games where I'm like, that was really actually very good.
Yeah.
And we needed that. Because we had Call of Duty, which was terrible. and we had resistance. That was made in probably 6 months.
Yeah,
and that's not high, that's not an exaggeration. And Resistance Burning Skies from the same studio, made again in probably 6 or 8 months. The more I think back about Nihilistic, which doesn't exist anymore, the more I think about, like, well, they kind of did get the short end of the stick. I don't know how you're supposed to make these games that quickly.
Sure.
But we needed a first-person shooter, and I remember the promise of Vita originally when it was still about console quality gaming on the go and about a AAA experience was that, like,
that was the
genre. I love shooters.
Yeah.
And that was the genre. I was like, this genre could work so well here. And they just fucked it up, except for one experience, and that was Killzone, where I was like, this is fantastic. They really got it. So Bravado Guerrilla Cambridge, they've since made Rigs on VR, and my hope is that they swing back to Killzone and make a PS4 Killzone game, as Horizon 2 undoubtedly, I think, enters development at Guerrilla Prime. So so Killzone Mercenary, number 8.
Okay. My number 8's Bastion. Supergiant. This is another one where how do you want to do this, right? It came into Xbox 360 years before, but I can't take away from how great Bastion is, and not to mention, but this was the thing, I didn't even know it when I did it, right? And it goes back to trophies and achievements, I think, where Bastion, I played on 360 and I was like, man, that was so much fun. I loved that experience. I don't know if I want to go through it again. Whereas Bastion on Vita, I beat and immediately started my new game plus, right? I wanted to get back in and I wanted to see the different sides of it. And it's one of those games, sadly, that I got distracted from, but it's one of those games that still sits on my screen because I'm legitimately going to go back to it, right? Like, the Vita pipeline is slowing down, at least with quality. And like, that's when it's going to be like, okay, cool. I need to finish Volume, and I want a Platinum Bastion, and I want to go back and do all these different things with these games. And Bastion continues to be that game that speaks to me, both in terms of visuals, storytelling, voice acting, and the fact that they didn't miss a step. So many games like this do get brought over from PlayStation 3 or 4, come to Vita, and there's something wrong with them. The load times don't do this. Bastion's phenomenal. It's still the phenomenal game, and I think arguably might be more immersive that way if you have really great headphones and you're sitting there staring at it as you play. Like, you're getting the story told to you, and like, you've played a little bit of it, right?
I played most of it.
Yeah. And you go through, like, you know, that fucking voice of the narrator talking about what you're doing as you do it, telling you the story, and then to go back and see the little, and there's challenge rooms, and there's, it's just like, this is a game, especially challenge rooms, especially the upgrades, especially this, that I want with me when I'm in that mode, when I'm playing Bastion. There's so many console games that I don't like checking out of, you know what I mean? Like, I'm doing this, but now I'm going to go off and I'm going on a trip, or I'm doing this, I'm just working. Sure. Having that ability to pop in, and even if it is, I just want to, you know, go to the crossbow range and fuck around. It's great.
Number 7, Severed. This comes from Drinkbox. We were talking about them before. They do Guacamelee, they did Mutant Blobs. Working on something now, hopefully Guacamelee 2, which I think would be smart. Severed was made for Vita, and and that's literal. That's not a figurative thing. They made this game for Vita because Drinkbox was really one of the earliest and most vocal proponents of Vita and the success you can find on Vita with a small audience. And I've brought it up before, but I'll never forget their GDC talk when they were talking about why putting games on iOS is a waste, because they can make a game like Severed for iOS and sell a fraction of what they would sell on Vita, even though the Vita's population of gamers is much smaller and they'd make more money there. And so Severed was them putting their money where their mouth is at a very dangerous time. That game came out in the spring of 2016.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, for history purposes, they announced they're doing Severed, and Vita is, people are already fleeing the Vita. Developers are already fleeing. Sony is leaving the Vita behind, let alone to continue to work and then, yeah, release it in the spring of 2016, this year as we're recording this. Crazy and unfounded, but like, every time you went to PAX, every time you went to a PSX, their booths were swarming with people wanting to play it.
Yep. Severed, I think, is a, you know, so for people that don't know, Severed is a first person dungeon crawler, in the same vein of Shadowgate and other games that you might have played when you were younger. And those games actually do proliferate in a much more hardcore way on Vita to this day. I mean, there's a fucking million of those games on Vita if you are into them, but they're way more hardcore than Severed. Severed is all about the mechanics of severing enemies' limbs and using them to create new goods. And you're exploring a map that is pretty rudimentary, and the game can be beaten and 100%ed in like 6 or 7 hours. You can get the Platinum Trophy pretty easily. I think that the game, if you like the art style of Guacamelee, same art.
Yeah.
They're not tied together, which I think is strange, and I think that they miss an opportunity there simply for some sort of fusion between the two worlds, because I think they could have sold games that way, because it looks like Guacamelee in terms of its cutscene art. But the mechanics, I think, are fun. They're not too deep, but there's a certain difficult parts of the game, and I found it just incredibly satisfying. When I was finished with Severed, I remember I finished Severed right before I went to Off the Grid, which is a thing in San Francisco that happens during the nice months,
food trucks.
Where the food trucks congregate in these beautiful areas, and you go and eat, and you drink, and you you smoke and you hang out or whatever you want to do. And I beat it right before I went to one of those things, and it was on my mind for a long time, and I really, really loved it. And it's not one of those games. I don't want to just talk about Drinkbox and just pat them on the back for doing it because we're such Vita fans, but they do deserve the credit. They really did make a Vita exclusive, like we said, this year, and it did pretty well, I think. And it's since been ported to Wii U and iOS and stuff like that, but Vita is where it's at. They made it for us, and they really delivered. And they took 100%. Extra time with it too. They didn't have to. The game was supposed to come out earlier, and they did hold it. It was supposed to come out in 2015. So, really great game, and it's a must play. It really is a must play, and you can be done with it if you or download it one morning and you have off. You can be done with it by dinner. You know,
yeah, it's something special. It's on my list, so I'll save my praise for when we get there. My number seven is Helldivers, which is I think an interesting pick for me because I fucking loved Helldivers enough that when it ate my save once, I went back and replayed it. And when it ate it again, I think that's when I tapped out. But I have since then tried to get back into it, but it's so heartbreaking to know how much I lost. But it's that normal thing with us where we're in the 1%. You know, we always have these problems with games, whether it be something from Housemarque or whether it be something from Helldivers, where it seems like it's because we have 2,000 friends or because we're moving our saves around 15 different things that no one else I ever really talked to had these problems, right? And I think even if they did, you can't look past how great Helldivers was and is to this point. I mean, I remember when we first got it, and I remember actually when it got announced and you played it somewhere and you're like, the game's fucking hard. Like,
I played it in Germany.
Yeah. You get shot, you can shoot your own people and they die right there, and it's like, and it
sounded, what I said was comically hard.
And that was the thing of like, I was like, you usually crave and yearn for hard games like a Mega Man or something where you're gonna, you know, learn to play it, wrap your head around it, figure out the boss order, go out and do that, have, you know, precise platforming, and that's usually a turnoff for me. I don't like being frustrated, like I say. And it wasn't until I played it at an event, I was like, all right, there's something here. But then we did a Let's Play when it first came out on PlayStation 4, all four of us. And then it all made sense. It all clicked when you're like, it's comically hard, where we're running around and Nick blew himself up and then Nick respawned and we shot him again. And like, you know what I mean? You're running around and these bugs are coming at you and you're blowing them up and getting on the thing and going. And it was like, that was all cool playing with other people, but you know, that's not really what our lives are. So then to go and start playing it on Vita on planes and feel like, oh fuck, this is third person Destiny on my Vita. That's exactly what this is. I'm going through, I'm earning new gear, I'm getting stronger, I'm taking on harder missions, I'm getting more rewards, I'm grinding these missions, but not in an annoying sense, to level up so that I can get a better walker, or I can get my first walker, or I can get this invisibility. Like, there were so many cool things, and it really felt like, when why it was so heartbreaking for me is that I was building my character out to be the specific kind of warrior I wanted that would let me then infiltrate these harder missions, and it did until things would get fucked up for me. But I can't even, with the sad ending, and I think that game's life with me cut short by that bug that I had, I think because of my friends list, I can't take away from all those hours I spent playing that and being in fucking love with that game and how much fun it was.
Yeah, I think Arrowhead did a really nice job with that game. Yeah. And it was one of those games, oh God, I want to say I played it at Gamescom in 2013 before the PS4 came out. I played it on PS3. And it was the same time I had seen Resogun for the first time. And I remember coming back and being like, Resogun's clearly going to be huge, but this game is... And I was so shocked by how no one was talking about Resogun, which is another honorable mention on Vita. I can't believe they made it work on Vita.
Yeah.
Because I said that it would never work on Vita, and it's not the same game.
To your argument, I was going to say it's a different game. They didn't have the voxels and like the little things and shit.
So it was obvious when I saw Resogun, I'm like, I can't believe no one's talking about this. This game's going to be fucking huge, and it's awesome, and we knew that. But Helldivers is one of those games where I saw it, and I'm like, I feel like this game's got an incredible amount of potential. The problem, I think, with that particular game is that they didn't shit and get off the pot quick enough with it. And I think that it marinated a little too long. And I also think that, and they needed it. I mean, I'm not saying that they took too much time, but I remember that I remember when I wrote about it, there was a lot of excitement. Then there was a huge lull, and then the excitement came back again. But then it came out at a time when the PS4, because this game was played by most people on PS4.
Yeah.
And the ecosystem there was too complicated and crowded for people to give this game, I think, the chance it probably deserved. And I assume the same thing happened on Vita to a lesser extent. So, I mean, they kept supporting it. People still play it.
I mean, they put out that special edition later on with all the DLC in there, and that actually saw a big boost to it. And I think has it been a PlayStation Plus yet game?
I don't know.
It might have just been the re-release that got a lot of people back into it, because I remember there was a quick moment where everybody was playing it again.
I could be wrong about this, but I do believe that this is one of the first, if not the first, Sony Computer Entertainment published game to come to PC.
Yeah.
Which I think was a smart move for them. I don't know if it worked out or not, but that game is so... That game's got PC bonafide, so... yeah, good choice.
Yeah.
Number six, Velocity Ultra, a Future Lab game. Yep. I brought it up before because Velocity 2X was a sequel. I think Velocity Ultra is one of the most pure fun games on Vita. And for people that haven't played it, it's top down and you're a spaceship and you're basically just trying to get to the top of the screen. But the idea is that the time is going and you're rated for how quickly you go and how many things you kill and being a completionist. So you can accelerate the movement of the screen to make yourself go faster. I think by holding down the R trigger or something like that. So basically what, and your ship can teleport. So you run into these barriers and you teleport to the next opening and so on and so forth. And by the time you get really good at the game, you're like, it's like looking at the, it's like the Matrix. It's like, it's an insane how good you have to be to get the platinum trophy in that game. And
did
that, yeah, I did. And that game is on a skill level, the hardest platinum I have.
Wow.
Like it's, it, like it is incredibly difficult. It was one of those games where I'm like, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
Like the to get platinum ratings on the last few stages is fucking really hard. Like you can't mess up at all, and these stages are long, minutes long sometimes.
Yeah,
you know. And really special game. I really feel like this is the kind of game that Vita should have and could have and did do best, which was a game that I don't know if I would want to play on a screen. In fact, I remember playing Velocity 2X because they brought it to PS4 and Vita, and then later to Xbox One at Future Lab, and they showed it to me on PS4, and I remember them coming into IGN to show it to me, and I wasn't playing it quite as well as I usually play it. I'm like, I'm better than this.
Real estate.
Yeah, and I'm like, I can't pay attention to the whole screen. Like, yeah. This is not made for a PS4.
It's like when you talk to people who are like competitively like playing multiplayer first-person shooters, and like Scott Lowe was always one, right? Scott Lowe has this giant TV in his living room, but when he wanted to play Call of Duty on another level, he went into the kitchen where they had like a 30-inch monitor because he could just see everything better. And even, I mean, not, don't get me wrong, like I had those skills and chops, but I always remember enjoying Titanfall more with Alfredo when I was playing in the capture bays on those little TVs, and when I go home with the bigger picture, it was a different feel. There was more screen to
go. It's hard to keep track of that real estate.
Yeah.
So I think Velocity Ultra, Future Lab again was one of the early and passionate supporters of Vita, and they're not only on this list because of that, but they deserve a lot of credit. I met those guys a lot. They used to come see me a lot in IGN. They were there in the UK, but they'd be in San Francisco like pretty often. So I used to go to lunch with them and stuff, and they were real passionate about it. They knew what made a good game, and I don't know what they're doing now. I don't know what's happened to them, but after Velocity 2X, but I can't wait to see what they come up with next, because I really do think that there was a special sauce in there. And again, Velocity 2X was a great idea, and it's still a great game, but it's not as good as Velocity Ultra, because I think it's one of those things where it's like you're like, I have to innovate in some way.
It's a sequel. And I don't want to be knocked for it feeling like the exact same experience. So let's put a new mechanic into it, a new setting.
And it was cool because what basically happened is you'd park your ship and then she would get out. So a female pilot, and she would run around in a side scroller, and then you'd be jumping around and teleporting and shooting things and stuff like that. Then you get back in the ship and go. And I'm like, that's a cool idea, but it didn't capture me the way Velocity Ultra did.
Gotcha. My number six is Rogue Legacy. Rogue Legacy, another jump over from the PC that I remember people talking about and putting it for Game of the Year at PC and playing it on my PC when we needed to talk about it. I was like, okay, cool. This seems neat, but whatever. And then when it came to Vita and it was that, all right, I'm invested in this and I'm playing hour after hour. That's like one of those rare things I remember of going out at night, and like I knew there'd be like downtime, and not even like I wasn't taking a train, like Ubering somewhere, but I knew I'd be sitting for a while, like waiting for a movie to start, and I would bring that with me because it was so good in those bite-sized experiences. And you talk again about, you know, it's a rogue game, a roguelike game or whatever. You're coming back, the goofy shit of like your character is having these genetic traits, right? So he's colorblind, or he's vulnerable to this, or he's afraid of spiders, so he'd see more spiders. That was a funny thing, but for me, really, it was coming back with your, all right, I've died, I'm going to spend the money I earned, come back and be a little bit better, a little bit better, and a little bit better. And finally, where it turns, where I'll never forget playing that and having a great run and being like, oh shit, I'm powerful. Like, I understand how to attack certain enemies now, let alone the fact that I have more health, or I've done more, I forget what I was upgrading, but I have more abilities, but I also understand the game now. And so I'm coming in no longer like, I'm going to die in the first 5 seconds, and I'm going to go 5 minutes, and then I'm going to go further, and then I'm going to, you know, do the bosses, and then I'm going to go chase this down. It was rewarding, and it was exciting, and it's colorful, and it's fun, and it kept me entertained every way. And that's the whole thing with these procedural generated worlds, you know, that you talk about, that work so well with Vita, right? When you're talking about Binding of Isaac or Spelunky or something like that, there's something to getting in there and knowing the mechanics, but having it be different every time and making that then bite size and going through, and why that works so well on a handheld.
Yeah, I think, well, Rogue Legacy is my number five game, so that would be next. And I think that the experience itself worked and was tailored properly to Vita, I think, which can't be understated. But I also think that it understood what makes roguelikes the most playable and the most interesting. The My problem with the roguelike genre is it's proliferated a lot, and there are big examples of these kinds of games. Like, so Binding of Isaac, I think, is fine. But I also look at it and I'm like, it's obtuse, and that's not what makes roguelikes fun.
Sure.
And then I look at a roguelike like Enter the Gungeon, and I'm like, this is fun, but you're not getting any more powerful. Yep. You're not going anywhere. This doesn't understand what makes roguelikes fun. Then I look at Nuclear Throne, and I'm like, this is a fun game, but it doesn't have the hook that some of the best roguelikes have. It doesn't quite understand. Rogue Legacy understood everything that made the game great, from the mechanics that felt perfect,
yep,
to the extremely deep upgrade systems. I mean, these are incredibly deep and significant minutia in these games, and you really had to use your coin properly. Like, you really couldn't get crazy with the way you're upgrading. It was very incremental and very slow, especially if you weren't very good at the game, which a lot of people weren't. And then there's a whole, it has the whole like Ghosts and Goblins, like, just do it again.
Yep.
Kind of thing where it's like, you didn't beat it the first time, you actually beat it the second time. And I think Rogue Legacy is really one of the perfect Vita games.
Agreed, man.
Really, really, really good game. And I don't know anything about that team, but my hope is that there's a sequel. Like, God, that game has to have a sequel.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but
I doubt it'll be on Vita. But
that's the thing about it where we talk about, yeah, you talk about Nuclear Throne, you talk about Binding of Isaac, Spelunky. Rogue Legacy was so good that it honestly ruined a lot of those for me, where people really love them and I get in, I'm like, oh, but I want it to be like that. I want another experience exactly like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was a big problem with me with like Nuclear Throne. I think got the closest to being really awesome for me. Yeah. I think that game's really fun. It's hard as hell. Enter the Gungeon was one of those things where I'm like, I like this game, but again, I kept thinking of Rogue Legacy where, yep, I'm like, there's no reason for me to keep playing this, because
when I die and I came out, I was like, where can I get, there was like a coin counter up here. I'm like, what's that? And I look up online, I'm like, that's not going to do what I want it to do.
Yeah. Like, basically you're getting a new items that will randomly generate.
Yeah.
And I'm exactly like, but that's not fun. Like, I want to make my character stronger. And so you're right. Rogue Legacy was a big spoiler.
Yeah.
Because it did it so much better than everyone else. And Binding of Isaac is a different kind of game, and I like what it is, but again, I don't like obtuse games for obtuse, like to be obtuse. It's the reason why Hyper Light Drifter, I was like, nope. You know, like I played it for an hour and I'm like, I don't have time for this. I'm 32 years old. I have a million games to play and I don't have time for this fucking abstract shit right now. Like, tell me what the hell's going on and what you want me to do and I'll do it.
Yeah.
But so that's just my own personal preference. And I feel like Rogue Legacy just understood.
Yep. My number five, since Rogue Legacy is your number five, is Uncharted Golden Abyss. A criminally underplayed Uncharted. I don't think it gets the credit it deserves. We talk about it all the time, you know, both on podcasts and just bullshitting around of like, better than Drake's Fortune. You know what I mean? Like, it definitely is. I think if in terms of critiques, right, like my only problem with it is I think it was a little too long. I think it was long in the tooth, where it did feel like, all right, we should be wrapping up by now, Nate, but whatever. But still, it was an Uncharted game, and it was an Uncharted on the handheld, and it you know, introduces Miranda. It has a younger Sully, so we're getting this more relationship backstory that we needed, I thought in that term of like caring more and more about these people. And it felt like it fit. It felt like an Uncharted game, and it felt like a handheld Uncharted game. And you didn't have to use the touchscreen bullshit to like, when you wanted to trace things down, you did have to rub for charcoal. But
and put it in front of the light.
I was going to get to that. Mm. I liked the charcoal rubbing. I thought that was fine. Whatever. It didn't annoy me. But then, yeah, the light thing that was like super.
I was on a plane when I did that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I remember playing in bed at one point and it came up and I was like, fuck. And I turned on the flashlight on my phone and like held it. But even then it was like, it had to hit in a very specific way. Otherwise it didn't do it. And I'm like, that's dumb. But you could look past it all because you're having fun and you're playing Uncharted. Didn't need that black market bullshit.
Yeah, that was. So Golden Abyss was the first Vita game I bought. I bought it at the Japanese version when we imported our Vitas, yeah. And I was actually quite astonished by how good it was, and it showed so much promise of what we could have gotten on Vita if things just went a little differently.
Yeah.
And that's really one of the sad things about it, is I don't think we need a game like Uncharted. I thought that that's what I wanted for a couple of years, and then I realized that's not what I wanted. So yeah. I don't think we're any worse for the wear for not getting these AAA bonafide first party experiences like we got with Golden Abyss, but it is a stamp in time of like, this is what we thought and this is what Sony thought Vita was going to be.
Yeah.
And it was the proving ground for it, and it's a launch game, and it's still one of the great Vita games, and I think that, you know, bend for all of the shit we give them in terms of like, how long is it going to take you to make another game?
Yeah.
They still haven't released another game. This is their last game. So we're talking about 2011, December 2011, this game came out in Japan. It was done in the fall of 2011, and they still are not done with their next game. So yeah, we give them shit, I think rightfully so in that regard. But Uncharted is, I agree, better than Drake's Fortune, definitively better than Drake's Fortune. And played really well. And I do agree that it was really long, and I think that it was very gimmicky and experimented with a lot of things, but that's the nature. I mean, we talk about Little Deviants in these games. I mean, these are the games that, like, you have to, or Escape Plan, where, like, you're trying to use the device the way that they wanted to use it, and we realize quickly that that's not really fun. But
yeah,
I really liked it a lot. And part of me is sad that it never got ported anywhere because people don't know.
Yeah.
Part of me is thrilled that it never got ported because it is like one of Vita's stars. Like it's you have to play it on Vita. I think that they probably wanted to and tried to port it to PlayStation 3 at some point, but you know, who knows? And I feel like it's kind of cool that it's like you have to have a Vita to play this canon installment in the Uncharted franchise that is actually a bridge between two games and actually is a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Number four we're on?
Yeah, you're number four.
Guacamelee.
Ah.
So we talked about Severed. We're going to talk about Guacamelee now, another Drinkbox game. Guacamelee is one of those games where I remember them coming to show it to me when I ran IGN PlayStation, and I was floored. And I remember I had two complaints. One was like, originally you had to control it with the analog stick. They fixed that. It's because of your boy Colin. Number two is, so you could use the D-pad, which is natural for those kinds of games. But again, when you're developing a game for so long, you lose the forest for the trees. The second thing is that I thought the combat wasn't good. And then when I really sat down and played with it, I'm like, oh, I was totally wrong. Actually, the combat's really great. Guacamelee is a great Metroidvania game with a Mexican theme, which I think is unique and novel. And it's the polarity of the undead world and the real world. And all. There's just a lot of great meat on that bone. And similar to Severed, you could play it in a day. And I think that it's just super fun and super rewarding and super intuitive and clever. The characters are interesting. This game's begging for a sequel, and I don't know what they're thinking, like, about not doing it yet. Like I fear for them that they've waited too long. And maybe not, but my hope is that they're making a sequel, because Guacamelee is really a special game, and whether you played it on PS3, whether you played it on Vita, whether you played it on PS4, Xbox One, whatever, you gotta play it.
That's the thing. I agree with you. Yeah, it's a special game, and I wonder if it feels like they've waited too long because we're Vita guys, but Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition or whatever, I think that was what it was called, that came out after the Vita version.
2014.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not, in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't been that long if that's where you played it. I'm sure a majority probably played it there, you'd think, when it got to real consoles and started doing all that stuff. But yeah, that was a special Vita game, and those guys get it, you know what I mean? And they have since the launch of the Vita, and even beyond that, honestly, with the pub fund and everything else they've done. Great studio.
Yeah, and Sony's smart to identify them too.
Yeah.
For their part, we shit on Sony a lot, but obviously they did identify these guys as key players in the indie support of their ecosystem, not just Vita.
Yeah. My number four is Luminous, Electronic Symphony. I was a huge Luminous fan to begin with off of the PSP versions, and when they announced they were putting one out for Vita at launch, you're like, okay, cool. Let's see what it is. I still stand by, it's one of the few games where the back touch wasn't annoying to me. You know what I mean? It actually added a dimension to gameplay. It was key to getting really high scores. I remember, you know, playing that, and when it was Panda Musk had come to visit and a whole bunch of other people were visiting. Oh, they might have been here for shit, whatever Beyond that would have been. Was it
300?
Maybe? I don't remember. There was a live event that we were involved with that I think was a Beyond that was right after the launch of the Vita. So it's somewhere in that anyways. I remember being at a bar and having, like, they were talking about high scores, and I mentioned mine. Nobody believed me, so I had to show them how I was doing it. And they didn't understand to use the back touch. They didn't know how to do this thing. And, like, for me, you know, we have this Tetris rivalry. We ham up. We both just love Tetris. Like, Luminous is, like, the puzzle game I love the most. And there's something about it where, when it's working, when you're in those late games and, like, the way it ebbs and flows, where it's not just constantly getting harder and getting faster, that happens, but then all of a sudden it'll slow down and it's with the music and there's another level set here that isn't like that. Going through and playing that was fantastic. Going through and playing it and like, for me, not being, you know, good at a lot of online games or something like that, going through and playing a game like Luminous where I was chasing high scores, and it was, this is when, you know, you're thinking about the Vita, you're trying to think about it as a launch system, as it's going to be AAA, it's going to be another console, it's going to be a pillar. So to be syncing online and seeing what Dale North was doing, and he was, you know, him and I were battling back and forth with James Milkey over in Japan working on the game, like cackling and watching us fight each other and do these different things, like that was a cool experience, and that was a cool thing to see with not only a handheld but a new game, and a game that was awesome, a great puzzle game that came out and everybody really fucking enjoyed.
Number three for me is Gold Abyss.
Gotcha.
so we don't talk about that
anymore. Sure. Number three for me, Severed. I echo everything you said, right? Severed is an amazing game. It was a story that I thought was really well, but it was a world that I loved, and I loved the world. The one thing you talked about is, you know, it's not that hard. You can get through it in a day. I loved that because I didn't want to. I loved seeing the mouth on the wall and not knowing what it meant, but knowing I'll get back to it and how great the map was at tracking it. It wasn't like I was going to be afraid.
Yeah, that was special. That, you know, there was, I mean? You never lost
it. Yeah. And that was the thing of like, yeah, it wasn't hard, but it wasn't so easy that it wasn't challenging. It was this mix of like, I'm going to get back to you later and I know I'm going to. And that would be the thing. You've unlocked this new power. Go here to continue the story. Fuck the story. I'm going to go back to every world and find everything. And like some of those things of trying to figure out how, you know, like you're looking, it sounds so simple because you can't look up or down, of like looking around, like the solution's in this room. How do you do it? And then see something through a window and the other thing, or see just something out of place up here to tap and break. It was like,
yeah, very clever design.
Yeah. Sever's awesome.
Two, Danganronpa, Trigger Happy Havoc. I really don't think people understand how good this game is and how dynamic and special it is in a console admittedly with, or a handheld with, lots of visual novels. I'm sure people will be mad that Virtue's Last Reward is not on here or whatever, or whatever the fuck the one that came out just earlier this year. But the Danganronpa is just so Japanese and so strange and so dynamic and so interesting that I think that it's so awesome that Vita got to experience these before. Like, this is one of the, I think Vita's great draws was this series. And it's since been on PC and it's coming to PS4 and all that kind of stuff. And obviously Danganronpa 3 is going to be on PS4 and Vita, so they're still going to support it. But, and it'll probably be, I assume, one of the last Vita games of huge consequence.
Sure.
But what's cool about it is obviously Monokuma is a great character and an interesting character and a deeper character than I think a lot of people know, like just from the outside, because he's insane. And he's also a teddy bear. And he's also a robot. So there's a lot of different, there's a lot of things there. But what's funny about it is that it has this awesome juxtaposition and an intentional one of weird teddy bear and these characters, these kids, these high school kids that are all really good at random things, like the best swimmer and the best blah, blah, you know?
Yeah.
The ultimate, they call them. Ultimate students. And your character is like just mediocre.
Ultimate average.
Yeah, guy, like, right? And the story for people that don't know is basically like Hope's Peak Academy is like this prestigious Japanese school, and they're all trapped there by Monokuma, and the only way out is for them to kill each other, but one of them has to kill someone else and get away with it. So that's what the whole all of Danganronpa is about. That the second one's about that, the third one's gonna be about that, about a murder mystery where you're packed in with all these people, someone has to kill someone, and so at some point someone does. And then you investigate the scene. There's one less person, and then there's like a trial. And so the game is like a visual novel with Phoenix Wright added to it. And I'm a huge Phoenix Wright fan. I fucking love Phoenix Wright, which is something a lot of people don't know about me. I love those first three Phoenix Wright games. I think they're excellent. And so there's a lot of interesting shit to do in the game because you're developing relationships with people that are optional, kind of like Persona or something like that, where you only have a certain amount of time between when Monokuma is going to ask you to do something crazy. So you have to decide who you're going to spend your time with and who you're going to nurture these relationships with. Those people can die at any moment, so you might be nurturing the wrong relationships, and you only know that the second and third time you're playing the game. And the class trials are cool because they force you to really pay close attention to what's going on, similar to Phoenix Wright. So I like the story element of it. I like the characters, even though, and again, it's super Japanese and super weird, and it's, I get that that's going to be a turnoff to some people, but Danganronpa is really, really excellent. And that first Danganronpa game is just phenomenal. And I think the second one to a lot of people is going to be indistinguishable from the first one. I just feel like that was the one that struck me because that was the first one I played. I didn't know what I was going to, you know, I remember NIS because I have a great relationship with NIS, and I used to take all their games because I was just interested in what they were doing. And I felt like that was an untapped segment of PlayStation gamers on big sites like IGN. They typically weren't writing about these games. And so I did. That was a game that I wrote a lot about. And I was pleasantly surprised, and I'm so, so excited for the third one. I got to get back to the second one. I want to play the first one again. I think when they come to PS4, I'll just play them again.
Did you platinum?
No, very hard to platinum.
Okay.
Very, very hard. Very time consuming. But yeah, you got to give a shot to Danganronpa, and Monokuma is my dude.
This is where you talk about for my number two and my number one. This could change on any given day kind of thing. But my number two I'm putting is Persona 4 Golden here. I mean, what can you say about Persona 4 Golden that hasn't been said by millions of people, or seemingly millions of people on the internet, right? Where it's amazing and it's awesome. And it's, yeah, I mentioned, you know, everlasting gobstopper before. This for sure is that, right? This is a JRPG that's with you in your pocket, and it will take you 60, 70, 80, 90 hours to go through and play it. And if you're going to get the true ending, or if you're just going to blaze through, or if you're going to do this, but the gameplay and the dungeon crawling, that's fun. And like, you know, it's rock, paper, scissors kind of thing. What are they weak to? Okay, great. But I mean, it really comes down to, right, these relationships you're building and building out your character and choosing which girl you're going to romance and how you want to interact with these people and how you want to respond to Yosuke and what's going on with Nanako and the relationships you build with all these people and that friendship circle of, like, you know, when you see them gathered around the food court table at Juness, right? Like, everybody's like, gets that. And if you can hear the song, I can hear the Persona song in my head, just thinking about it in the Velvet Room. And, you know, for me, it was that weird thing of Jeff Haynes had turned me on to Persona when I first got to IGN, and he had just reviewed Persona 3, I believe. And I played that on PS2, and I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. And I had struggled forever to find a JRPG that worked for me, that it connected with me, but setting it in modern Japan, you know, modern Tokyo, or at least a world like that for Persona 3, and making them school children and like giving them relationships I could understand or wrap my head around, I was like, this is fucking great. And Persona 4 was coming out really right after that, based on some kind of the way they were imported. I forget what it was. But when it got there, I was reviewing something else, never actually bothered to put it up. I still had it on my shelf forever. But then, you know, PSP comes and it gets the Fez edition of Persona 3, and I'm playing that and I'm still enjoying that. So when it finally comes, you know, my chance to come to really get invested with Persona 4 comes on the Vita. It is that game that I think it took so many of us by storm, and so many of us playing, because it was on another level. I loved Persona 3, but this was on such a different level of it in terms of who the characters were, and not even the intrigue of the story, which is interesting on its own, but what your interactions were going to be, and wanting to go on the ski trip or go to the sauna with all these people and continue to have these relationships, and like the way people feel about Chie or Yukiko or whoever, you know what I mean? Teddy. Like, these are like family members to everyone who plays that, I think, and that's special, and that's something that can't be overlooked.
Still got to get back to it.
Yeah, no, that, see, like, you and me, I think, have a very similar stance where it's like, I need to get back to Danganronpa. I've started Danganronpa like 3 or 4 times, but I always do it on a plane after a show, and I get tired, and I'm gonna take a nap.
It's a game that requires brain power, and I think the same thing exactly. Is with Persona, where
exactly.
I actually got a 5, 6, 7 hours into it,
yeah,
not even a year ago, and I just, something came up, and I'm like, but I liked it.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, I got to restart it. So, number one, Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight was native to PC, Wii U, and 3DS. And I think it was great on PC, and I think it was great on Wii U. I think it was less great on 3DS. But Vita, it found a perfect home on Vita. Shovel Knight is one of the great games of the last 10 years, bar none. And, you know, Shovel Knight came out a little late in the cycle of 8-bit is cool again, or retro is cool again, where that shit was just being run into the fucking ground in a shameless, reckless abandon, and still to a degree is to this day. But Shovel Knight, as I explained when we were at IGN, when I reviewed it and did videos on it and stuff, wasn't just 8-bit or wasn't just retro for the sake of being 8-bit or retro. It understood what it meant to be a game from that era, and I really do stand by the fact that it wasn't just trying to be old. It was informed by great old games. And there's a major difference there. There's a lot of Zelda 2 in it. There's a lot of Castlevania and Ninja Gaiden in it. There's Mario in it. There's DuckTales in it. These are not middling or just good games. These are all really important, really fantastic games. And Shovel Knight takes and is informed by those and takes a lot of cues from those games. Shovel Knight is special, and Yacht Club is a great studio. And again, for clarity's sake, I'm friends with those guys, and I was the one who actually revealed that game to the world from the media. So I want to be clear that I do have a relationship with them. But they identified me because they knew I would love it. And lo and behold, man, like, I know that the Kickstarter didn't do as well as it did fine. They funded it. And I think that there was a lot of skepticism with my peers and with other people where they're like, this game is not what you think it's going to be. And I'm like, no, it is. And it ended up being a phenomenon, and I'm so happy and I'm so proud of them, and I'm so happy to have been there from the very beginning with them, because just watching their story and watching them develop and watching what they were capable of doing, they are fucking G's, man. They like really, the hand-drawn fucking lovely music, brilliant gameplay. My only complaint is it's not hard enough. That was my only complaint. It's like, I want it to be even harder. And just seeing smatterings and echoes of Mario and just fighting bosses with sub-weapons like Ninja Gaiden or like Castlevania, and you're on a map like Mario 3 and you're pogoing on things like you're in Zelda, yeah, or you're in DuckTales. I'm like, this is Zelda 2 specifically. I'm like, this is just phenomenal stuff. And Shovel Knight is, you know, one of my favorite games of all time. And I think it's just really a great game on Vita. And if you haven't played it, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Damn. Mm-hmm. Laying it out there. Mm-hmm. So the number one I've put on here is Freedom Wars. It's on there strictly out of selfish purposes. I think, you know, whenever this conversation comes up on Conor Greg Live, I'm going to Vita, what should I play? I always throw out Persona. I think Persona probably is pound for pound the best game on the platform. But doing this list always gets you nostalgic, number one. And it also, for Vita, kind of feels like we're getting ready to send this guy off into the sunset, right? And to sit back and be honest and have an honest conversation with myself and you in the audience, like, I had no game was as fun on the Vita for me as Freedom Wars. Freedom Wars, we talk about how, for me, Drake, Uncharted Golden Abyss, that's what we thought the Vita was going to be, right? And then you have the end cap of that, you know, for Sony's bookends, Freedom Wars, their last AAA game they're going to put out for it, right? And that's what it should have been, in the way of, I will never forget that vacation back to Missouri where I had been playing Freedom Wars on my own nonstop, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was with Christine at the time, and she was watching me play it, and she's like, oh, I'm going to get into it too. And she started playing it. And then us on that plane, playing on the plane, and then landing, and both of us being like, oh, it's so cool, and I'm showing around Columbia. And I'm like, but like, I really want to play Freedom Wars. She's like, I do too. And we just started going to coffee shops every day and would just sit there for hours and play Freedom Wars and go out and go on these missions and take down these things. And it was so cool. It gave me such vibes of what I loved about Peace Walker on PSP, where I used to, you know, Caleb and Mike P and all these people, we would get together and go to a bar and just fucking grind missions and get new shit and get new, what do you call it, motherboards for the AI and Metal Gear. It was the same thing here, where it was like, fuck, I'm beating the game, but I want better weapons because I want to be able to advance and I want to be able to knock. I was really intent on trying to get my sentence down to zero. Like, I was that into this game. And so to do
very hard to do.
That we'll get to that in a second. But that was the thing of like going through and playing it and feeling like I was being rewarded and getting it. And I'm like, I need this, and combining them all for this better weapon. It was like, it was such a fucking awesome game to play by myself, to play locally with somebody, and then to play online with other people. Like, it worked in a way that, like, fuck, why weren't more Vita games doing this? Because this was something special. This was a special, special feeling that I don't get out of a lot of other games, because it is that let's go interface together, but go home and take our characters and our saves and all that stuff. But it came too late, not to mention that Freedom Wars, like what you're saying with Danganronpa, is an incredibly Japanese game, right? And so, like, for me, like, half of that game is I was earning, you know, my years and points to get the new outfits, and then going through and changing all the colors and getting the sliders and getting different hair. And like, I loved that shit of just updating my character. The story, it was interesting, don't get me wrong. Percy Proppa, what up? My boy still got his little vinyl figure at home.
Percy Proppa could have been bigger.
Exactly. But it was like, that wasn't why you were playing it. You were playing for those experiences wrapped around it. And then the problem I had with it was that, like, I was so into it. I was having such much fun. I mean, I'm playing it more than anybody I know. And eventually it's just into the fucking wall where it was. Well, what the fuck do I do next? I know I need this thing to get that weapon. And you'd go look and it would be like, oh, okay. First off, there's no like, I was looking for like Japanese guides to import. They might have had a translation, nothing that I could find. And then it was like, all right, fine. Even websites like GameFAQs didn't have anything great at the time. And I'm boiling it down to finding like different weird message boards, right? And it was just into the minutia of like, oh, to get the weapon you're looking for, you need to fight this boss and hack off their left arm, and it's going to have like a 1 in 10 drop. And I was like, fuck that. No, sorry. I love this game, but I do not love this game to go through and feel like I'm wasting time. Because it had been so good, I felt, of rewarding me and making everything I was doing felt like it mattered in some different way. But then to get here to like, okay, I'm getting my ass kicked by whatever, you know, stage this is. I beat the game, the narrative, I'm sure there's some fucking weird ending I don't know about. But
I'm sure.
To keep going and do all the specials and all this different shit, it was like, no, no, you need the best weapon, and to get the best weapon, now you're looking at grinding for like 20 hours. I'm like, I can't. I just can't do
it. Yeah, the shame with Freedom Wars, I think, I didn't reach that wall because I didn't play it as much as you did, but the shame there is that it was isolated on Vita. I think it actually did better than they thought it was going to do in the West, but I think a lot of that had to do with our evangelism and other people's evangelism.
Sure.
Well, it's really our evangelism. No one else was talking about it. But also, I feel like this is a franchise they shouldn't abandon. I feel like this should come to PS4, and I feel like this is one of those things where I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
Yeah.
I also wouldn't be surprised if Freedom Wars 2 came to Vita, not necessarily here, but in Japan, where Vita is still really actually thriving. It's a little strange that they weren't able to turn it around quicker, and I guess the distance between the release of the game in the West in 2014 and now indicates that it's just not going to happen, but it would be cool for them to go back to the well and be like, well, we're going to bring Freedom Wars to PS4, and I'm not talking about a port, but just make a new Freedom Wars game with the same idea, the same mechanics, make it very PlayStation-centric and charge a reasonable price for it, and yeah. I think people would get in, but it is a great game.
And that was the same thing, too, of like just talking about it and this is probably why it speaks to me, because I get so many Peace Walker vibes on it, but going to PSX that first year, and I'm pretty sure I have this, we've been to so many conventions, but
that's where you play with the kids.
Exactly. Where I said, hey, shout out to the best friends, come play, the Freedom Wars with me. And so many people did. And we just had different groups running and doing this stuff and teaching each other and learning. And it's like, that's so fucking cool when games do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always the promise of handheld gaming. That's always the promise of the Switch. What it'll actually turn out to be. Who the fuck knows?
All right. So let's do, I'll do the math, I guess.
Yeah. You tabulate while you do that. Over at kindoffunny.com/PSQ, you can leave your comments to be part of the show and your questions. Thanks to Jericho for usually gathering them. He didn't gather these. I did it myself because I'm a man of the people. And I asked, hey guys, what are your top 10s? And what's your? And tell me about your number one game. So a whole bunch of you responded. I'm always a big fan of that. We're going to start with Brooke. Brooke wrote in and said, hey Greg, my number one is Danganronpa. Trigger Happy Havoc. Why do Japanese games have such silly names? It gets my vote due to the quality of the writing and addictive gameplay. The story is mature with a great cast of characters. It also offers great replay value for a murder mystery. The plot really keeps you guessing. It convinced several of my friends to give a poor, unwanted Vita a loving home. One of the best games I've played in the last 5 years for sure. Also, shout out to Freedom Wars, which did not get enough time in the sun. Great game. Love, or have a great break, guys. Brooke. Thank you, Brooke. Jumping around here, I thought this was an interesting one. Lindsay chimed in with a list that was in no particular order, but then says, I'd say Hotline Miami or Bastion are the best games on my list, but my number one is Actual Sunlight. Maybe it's because I just played it, but this game encapsulates why I love Vita and gaming in the current gen. Many of the games on this list are narrative-driven games that I picked up via PlayStation Plus, games I might not have picked up otherwise. Actual Sunlight is completely depressing and soul-crushing. It's the kind of game where you spend infinitely more time processing its impact than you do playing it. That's, you fucking nailed it right there, Lindsay. Having a game touch on such difficult and dark topics in a real way is just such a cool experience. And I love games giving us an approachable way to experience that. Let's go around here. One Shot popped in and said Danganronpa is his number one. My number one spot can actually be pretty interchangeable between Danganronpa and Persona 4. I really enjoy them both for the same reasons of having a great story and cast of characters that I cared about. It says something about a game when I want to replay it despite knowing all the twists and turns it takes. When someone asks about what games to play on Vita, Danganronpa is the one that instantly comes to mind. I thought I had one more. No, here, yeah. Son of Mar wrote in and said, Persona. My number one is easily Persona. Not because it's one of the best JRPGs in years, but because it is such a well-told story. It is one of the few games to put me on the edge the way it does, to elicit excitement the way it does, and has a fun and refreshing system for a newcomer by mixing classic turn-based JRPG mechanics with simulator effects and systems. It's the game that made me buy a Vita, and I never looked back since getting both. Got to give props to both of you gents for always waving the Vita Island flag. It's what we do, Son of Mar. Don't worry. You still tabulating?
Yep.
Great. While you do that, I'm going to tell you about your best friend, all right? Ladies and gentlemen, we do a thing called PS I Love This Best Friend on PS I Love You XOXO. It's where one of you goes to kindoffunny.com/forums. You leave your PSN name and why you need PSN friends. We read it aloud here, and the other best friends send messages of support and or friend requests. Today's comes from PSN name Stranjack, Stranjak. Hey guys, I have a bit of a conundrum. I live in Ireland. Oh, my shillelagh. I have two distinct groups of friends, nerdy and non-nerdy. My nerdy friends and I play Magic the Gathering with parentheses. I run a magic YouTube channel called Windmill Slam, hashtag AD. Oh, hashtag ad. Ha, that's funny. And my non-nerdy friends don't play games much at all. This means I am left with no one to watch my back in the trenches of Battlefield 1 or help me get 3 stars on levels in Overcooked. So, any help from the awesome, kind of funny best friends would be much appreciated. Ladies and gentlemen, go ahead and friend PSN Stranjack, Stranjak. This is going to date me immediately. Does Overcooked have online multiplayer?
I didn't think so.
I didn't think so either. I don't know if they're going to be able to help you, Stranjack, but maybe they'll come to your house. Everybody, go friend him. And while you're friending him, remember, the PS I Love This Best Friend XOXO is brought to you by OWC DIY PlayStation 4 Hard Drive Upgrade Kit. PS I Love You XOXO was brought to you by the OWC DIY PlayStation 4 Hard Drive Upgrade Kit, available now at maxsales.com. Now that Christmas is over, you have one thing left to do. Install all of those new video games you received as gifts on your PlayStation 4. But with games taking up 50 gigabytes of storage space, your drive can fill up fast. If you need more storage on your system, quadruple the storage space on your PS4 with the OWC DIY PlayStation 4 Hard Drive Upgrade Kit. With the OWC kits included 2 terabyte hard drive and all the tools needed for installation and to transfer your data, you'll be able to spend less time managing game data and more time actually playing games. The kit includes an enclosure so you can reuse the PS4's original hard drive as an external drive. That's actually awesome. I didn't read that far into the data before. There's even an instructional video to guide you step-by-step through the installation. Visit maxsales.com and step up your gaming with the OWC DIY PlayStation 4 Hard Drive Upgrade Kit.
DIY means do it, y'all.
Do it, y'all.
So, by my count, we have 16 individual games between us.
Okay.
On our 20 slots. The top 10 is actually top 8 because there are 2 ties. So, number 8, Velocity Ultra. Number 7, Guacamelee. Number 6, Luminous Electronic Symphony. Tied at number 5, Persona 4 Golden and Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc.
That's cute that they're sharing them.
Number 4 is Shovel Knight. Number 3 is Rogue Legacy. Number 2 is a tie between Freedom Wars and Severed.
Gotcha.
And then number 1 is Uncharted Golden Abyss. Huh. That's the list. So Uncharted Golden Abyss, Freedom Wars, Severed, Rogue Legacy, Shovel Knight, Persona 4 Golden, Danganronpa, Trigger Happy Havoc, Luminous, Electronic Symphony, Guacamelee, and Velocity Ultra. That's the top 10 Vita games.
That's a great list of games.
It is.
Go out and play all those. Get your Vitas. And if you're one of these motherfuckers who's like, the Vita's got no games and I don't use my Vita anymore.
You're dumb.
Send it into the Vita relocation
program. You're dumb, but
kind
also send it into the Vita
relocation. Kindoffunny.com/Vita relocation program. And if you're also now the one who's saying, why would I send in my Vita for free when I could take it to GameStop? Why don't you take it to GameStop and shut the fuck up then? That's what doesn't make any sense. You can't have it both ways.
I was a little disappointed that people didn't. I thought that was a great idea for a video you put together. And some people are just fucking totally malcontent. It's just unbelievable how like. No one, like, it doesn't matter.
We'll bring them the joy.
It doesn't
we'll
matter.
Bring them the joy.
But thanks for making the Vita fail, everyone.
Time for PSN's worst name of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, whether you use a PlayStation 3, PlayStation Vita, PlayStation 4, or PlayStation VR, you can't fucking change your PSN name no matter how much you want to. It's been that way a long time. So every time here on PS I Love You XOXO, we make a cry to Shuhei Yoshida to let us change the names with one of your bad names. This one comes from John. John says, hey, Greg and Colin. You don't have to wait for Colin to respond. I'm John from the rainy country some call Finland, and my PSN name is Tetra Ninja 321. You might not think it's that bad, and you'd be wrong, but you have to see. I'm going to do all that again. You might think it isn't that bad, but you'd be wrong, as it isn't fun to constantly get friend requests and messages from randos who think I'm a YouTuber with 1.4 million subscribers. I obviously wasn't aware of his existence when I picked my name back in 2012, but as soon as I started playing multiplayer games, people started telling me how much they liked my videos, even though my channel sucks. It was then that I realized they thought I was an Asian guy living in Canada, even though it clearly says, quote, I'm a gamer-songwriter from Finland on my PSN profile. Real quick, John, nobody's checking your PSN profile to see what you wrote in your bio. Chill the fuck out. It hasn't been all bad, though. I actually met my best and only friend when he, too, thought that I was a famous
Jesus.
YouTuber. I think he means his only PSN friend, but who knows? Unlike everyone else, though, unlike everyone else, though, he actually wanted to be my friend after I told him that I wasn't who he thought he was. He probably noticed how cool I was. So please, Shuhei, let us change our names. Now, John, this is like the Michael Bolton situation. I don't feel you should have to change your name, all right? The other guy, he's doing whatever he has to do. It sucks.
Who was first, though?
You have to go hide. Well, I mean, he got it on PSN. Done. I'm assuming.
Well, he didn't get it on PSN. He put some numbers after it.
Well, I think, but I'm guessing. Oh, you don't think it's Tetra Ninja 321 is the guy's YouTube name?
No, I think it's probably Tetra Ninja or something like that. You would assume, right?
I assume that because I was like, that's a weird coincidence.
Maybe it's, I mean, if you just aped the guy's name completely, then these are the kinds of things that you're going to.
Well, he didn't know, though. He just loves being Tetra Ninja 321, apparently.
Maybe it's the guy's name is just 321 and they assume that.
That's an even better one. But yeah, John, I don't think you should run scared. I think you should just live it up and then ask all those kids for the PayPal information. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been PSI Love You XOXO. Remember, it is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast, and that keeps the mics on. So please go there. Subscribe to the two YouTube channels, back the other podcast, rate us across the world. If you see someone with groceries while you're driving, you roll the window down and say, yeah, PSI Love You! See if they drop the shit. That's all I wanted to know.
They throw their bag, the bread, the celery.
The celery, the eggs.
The eggs come out.
This is, of course, the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet because of your support, and we thank you very much for that. We love and appreciate you. Remember, it posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. No matter if there's holidays and we're not there, we'll make that fucking show happen.
As you can see.
Every episode of PSI Love You XOXO ends in a song and a segment we call Singing a Shuhei. This is where one of you talented motherfuckers goes to kindoffunny.com/PSM and you give me a song you made. I need an MP3, and I didn't think I'd have to spell this out for so many of you motherfuckers. It's an MP3 I can download. And nothing, I listen to songs, I'm like, that's a good song. I go to the SoundCloud, no download button. You're fucking yourself over. And a YouTube video. I put the MP3 at the end of our MP3. I annotate to your YouTube video at the end of our YouTube video. This one comes from Chris. Hey, Colin and Greg. He wants me to wait for you.
Hello.
It's Chris Dorkson. Back again with another song. Remember this guy? Dorkson.
Dorkson. Oh, yeah.
I'll jump to the PS, which you should have put in the run. It's pronounced Dirksen. My best friend and I lost it listening to you guys try to pronounce it. Don't worry, you're not the first, smiley
emoticon. Right, dork.
Chris Dorkson is back again with another song. I wrote this one about the coming of winter, which took Winnipeg by storm, literally, over the past few days. It's a simple acoustic track that I recorded and performed by myself over the past 48 hours. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a simple tune about the woes of the Canadian weather. Love you guys and all you do. Chris Dorkson. And they got the thing here. So, Chris, we love you. Thank you, of course, for telling us how to say your name. We will continue to ignore it
right
for the next decade as we use your music whenever we see fit. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure talking Vita with you. Until next time, know we love you and we miss you and we hope you have a happy new year.
I also don't believe him in the pronunciation. If it was pronounced Dirksen, it would be, why is the vowel an O and not an I? So,
great point. These people who write their fucking names out and then they're just like, no, it's pronounced this way. I'm like, no, this is how words work.
Yeah, you can't just make things up as you go along.
You don't look at my name Greg and say, oh, it's Gray. That's just how I pronounce it.
Grieg. It's actually Grig.
Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
The willow tree hangs its head in defeat as winter rolls in. To their dismay, have to turn back around. And I can't explain why the winter's caused so much pain. But they come anyways, deadly and without a sound. Snow falls down. Work that we can't refuse. I do it today, but with more to come, I use that as my excuse. And still every year, oh, I wish that it would be more clear. But still every year, I always get the winter blues. Covered steps. The ambulance makes its way down the street. cool spewing breath. Oh, but ironic, it's carrying death. But still every year, still I get those winter blues. My car won't start, I didn't plug it in, but what else is new? The wind picks up, I feel my body freeze, snow envelops me and you. The clouds make up our ceiling, as we lose all our feeling. So my frozen dear, these are my winter blues. With vehicles spewing breath, oh, but ironic, it's carrying death. Still my frozen deep, these are my winter blues. I wish that it would be more clear, but still every year, I always get the winter, always get the winter blues.